Thank you, everyone, for sticking around to the afternoon sessions here in the last day of the meeting. It's sometimes these sessions get a little thin, and you see, and you don't see as many folks as you'd like to see. But this is a nice crowd. I don't know, I was thinking about salad tonight for dinner. What do you think? Anyhow, this is a project that I did with a postdoc, Mateo D'Alessio, and Dan Snow. Both these folks are at University of Nebraska. And, of course, I'm at the USDA in Lincoln also. And so we got some funding to try and look at how antibiotics might affect soil microbial processes, both kind of in surface soils and in deeper soil cores. So one of the things that's an issue in Nebraska is we get a lot of nitrate that leaches down into the shallow groundwater systems, causes some issues. And so Mateo was a postdoc kind of focusing more on that, looking at leaching in deeper soil systems. And initially we did this study to try and figure out what sort of antibiotics we should look at, what sort of concentrations do we need to try and run through his little soil columns. But I think it does. It was a good project, initial data here, that'll be a jump-off point for some more studies coming up. So, of course, livestock antimicrobials, there's a lot of news stories out there about there now. I grabbed like three of these headlines just that came up in the last week or two. But certainly there's a public fear of the overuse of these antimicrobials in animal production. And the problem is it's not a simple, yes, we should use them or no, we shouldn't use them, because there's this relationship between efficient animal production, disease control, modern production practices, and even animal welfare. You know, you want to be able to be a good animal husband to your livestock, and you want to be able to treat infection when you need to treat infection, but you don't want to necessarily abuse antibiotics in a way that end up making bigger problems for the larger human community. So why the focus on antibiotic resistance? I think a lot of folks know this, but there's the worry of overuse of antibiotics in the livestock causes higher incidence of antibiotic resistance in manure. That's pretty well established. That manure gets into the environment, and you have a chance for horizontal gene transfer and even movement of the resistance, and perhaps even getting into human diseases. Now, there's a lot of leaps there, and there's a whole lot of research being done right now to try and understand how big a risk are these different little spots in the system. And this isn't even all the issues that we're up against trying to connect all those little arrows to the box and figure out, is antibiotic use in animals causing increased infection in humans? So the question I have is, what about the antibiotic residues themselves? We know that a lot of the antibiotics fed to the animals, administered to the animals, doesn't get metabolized within the animal. In some cases it does, but in some it's you know, 90% of the material comes out in the manure. And you can actually find some studies out there that say, hey, if you spread this manure around, we find higher levels of antibiotic resistance. Some studies say no, so there's a little bit on both sides there. Some of the residues break down quite easily in the soils. Others persist. And finally, transport is possible in the dust, in water as it moves through the system. Sometimes it doesn't move very easily. It all depends upon the nature of the antibiotic you're studying. And there's a very diverse range of chemistries involved that govern the process. So the question I had looking at this was, I wanted to know how soil ecosystem function may be affected by these livestock antimicrobials getting into the system. We know that there have been some studies already published that clearly show you can knock out iron oxidation or reduction. You can knock out certain things if an antibiotic finds its way into a system. And usually these studies are done with one or two levels of antibiotic, and it's kind of hit or miss. You don't have a real good understanding of how is this effect happening. Is it a gradual, or is it, you cross a certain threshold and suddenly you knock out your function that you want to understand in the soil. So the questions I had is at what threshold are these functions affected or partially inhibited? It's likely dependent upon the type of antibiotic, and the previous soil history impact this antibiotic effect. So if you had soils, say, that were getting a loading of animal manure on a fairly regular basis, would these systems be more sensitive to more antibiotic coming in, or would they be more resistant to or resilient to this thing? So I think there's a lot of really interesting questions to jump in and try and figure out what's going on here. So the experimental design that we did, and this was just kind of an initial study, so it was rather raw. We decided to do a serum bottle soil slurry incubation. So we got soil from site receiving beef cattle feedlot runoff. I came up with an artificial runoff media, which I'll describe in the next slide. And we looked at three fairly common antibiotics that are administered to animals, monensin, lincomycin, and sulfamethazine, at four different levels, of course, 0, 5, 500, and 5,000 part per billion. And I wanted to look at three conditions. This initial study I was doing with a postdoc, we were really interested in what happens under denitrifying conditions with these antibiotics when they start flowing through the soil. And to me, I thought, well, in surface soils, you can have a range of conditions that could happen. Of course, aerobic soils could get wet and you get largely a fermentation going on, or you could have denitrification in the surface soil. And then we also did triplet replication so we could do some statistics on it. The measurements we did were looking at fermentation products, and that was by GC, basically the volatile organic compounds and the semi-volatile organic compounds. Headspace gases, CO2, methane, nitrous oxide, that would build up in the serum bottles over time. And then we are going to analyze antibiotics in these some of these samples using liquid chromatography. But I don't, unfortunately, have any of that data yet, so maybe next year I'll be able to update folks on that. So the artificial runoff media was actually something we came up with. A study that I did with Lisa Durso was out at a cattle feedlot. And here you can see cattle feedlot pens right over here, little animals all hanging out there. Water would rain on these things, and you get the water collecting at the base of these slopes, and then it would be pumped and applied to these vegetative treatment areas up here. And so for a period of 3 years, we studied the composition of that feedlot runoff, and we looked at soils and did a number of other things in the vegetative treatment areas. But it did provide a real nice data set for me to say, well, if I wanted to come up with an artificial runoff that resembled cattle feedlot runoff, what was in it? And so this was basically the recipe for it, or the composition, I should say. A lot of nitrogen. Surprisingly, a little bit of even oxidized nitrogen was in that runoff. Organic nitrogen was something that, you know, was not well characterized. So I kind of made a guess and said, well, it's a beef feedlot, so maybe beef extract would work there. It ends up being about 3.5% nitrogen, and so I could add that to this artificial runoff media to kind of kick it up. And then a number of other elements also in the composition there. It is a little bit, well, I shouldn't say just a little bit. It's about three times more rich than other artificial runoff mixtures that have been published out there, which is kind of an interesting point. I'm not sure, you know, when folks say, here's our artificial runoff, this is the composition, it could be very different from other folks' artificial runoff. So I like the idea of having something that was established and didn't change from time to time. So the results that I'm going to present to you, I'm going to present the headspace gas analysis first, and then looking at the volatile fatty acid production in these serum bottles. It's fairly complicated, so I've tried to kind of really hone it down to just a few things. But before I jump into the headspace analysis, I should explain a little bit about how that was done. I take the headspace gases sample, analyze it on the GC, and after every sampling event, I would flush the gases from the system. So you would expect, say, CO2 to be produced and accumulate if you never flush the system out. But over time, if you flush the system out, you could have a period where there's high CO2 production, and then it goes away as you, say, burned up all your carbon substrates. So I just wanted to kind of explain that before I jumped in so it'd make a little bit more sense. Rather complicated, but I think there's a few important things that you can look at here. The way this data is presented, this and following panels, this is the aerobic condition. So this was actually in a bottle with a very large headspace of air. And fermentative conditions were, of course, flushed with helium, so there was no oxygen present. Denitrifying was also flushed with helium, but it was initially supplemented with 10 millimolar nitrate, in addition to the trace amount of nitrate that was already present in the media. Just looking at the patterns, you can see here on this scale, a lot more CO2 being produced in the aerobic incubations versus the fermentative and denitrifying. No big surprise there. And then you also had what appears to be here in this treatment here with Monensin, comparing it to negative, which would be the zero values, and also the other values. Monensin had a big effect on CO2 production. Methane, similar sort of study here. It's a little shorter time scale here. We had basically the samples were not flushed for a period there, so even the aerobic one went a little bit anaerobic, and we had some methane being produced. But the important thing to note here is here, the Monensin levels at 500 and 5,000 showed marked reduction in methane production. Okay. Nitrous oxide, a bit more complicated, but interesting nonetheless. There is an initial pulse of nitrous oxide being produced. And even after time in this aerobic incubation, we had some more nitrous oxide being produced. Fermentative and denitrifying, you would expect a big flush of nitrous oxide as you are reducing the nitrate down to N2 gas. Some of the antibiotics, including, and I've got a summation slide here a little bit later, Monensin at the higher levels, and I believe sulfamethazine, were able to completely knock out any nitrous oxide production in these incubations. This kind of summarizes a little bit. Basically, with Monensin, we had a much stronger effect on gas production. Lincomycin had some inhibition of nitrous oxide production at the highest levels in the aerobic incubations, and sulfamethazine was someplace in between where it affected both denitrification and aerobic nitrous oxide production at the highest level of sulfamethazine. Organic compounds, very similar, but consistent. The interesting thing is you would think with the Monensin, maybe we were completely knocking out all sorts of microbial activity. Well, actually, I think what we're doing is we're stopping the process at the very end. So what you'll see here is a large production of volatile fatty acids in the highest level of Monensin here. Otherwise, not much of a change there. Now, this is a gross oversimplification. There might be some interesting changes, say, in propionate or acetate. And I still have to kind of peel that stuff out and analyze it. But you can see how we get an overproduction of the VFA, but the VFA doesn't end up going to that last step in and being converted to CO2 or to methane. So increasing concentrations of VFA at the 5,000 part per million or part per billion level for these three different conditions. Lincomycin and sulfamethazine, no really observable effect. So the summary is that Monensin had an effect at 500 and 5,000. Incomplete decomposition was going on. We get it to VFA, but we didn't go any further with these two antibiotics, with Monensin, and to some degree with sulfamethazine. And it might be related to the Monensin is a generalist type of antibiotic. It affects membranes, the passage of ions across membranes, so it affects a larger group of bacteria, while sulfamethazine and lincomycin are kind of more specific antibiotics targeting protein synthesis and I think it's purine synthesis for nucleic acids. And what I found here was that instead of there being a strong threshold that I was crossing where suddenly all activity stopped, there seems to be more evidence for a gradual and not like a threshold type of inhibition. So, for instance, the 500 part per billion had somewhat of effect. 5,000 had a very strong effect. So I'm going to have to, I think, refigure my model a little bit. So what? Sulfamethoxazine and lincomycin typically at low part per billion levels in feedlot runoff. So, and if you think I was looking at 5,000 part per billion, very high levels. And in the study that I did with Lisa Durso, we never even detected sulfamethoxazine or lincomycin in the soil samples that we collected over a three-year period. Even though we knew it was going on to the vegetative treatment area, we never saw it in the soil. Monensin, although, is easily transported and also found at high concentrations in the runoff. And this summarized that VFA work that Lisa and I did, where it was always detected in the runoff, fairly high average concentration, and there was a peak concentration at around 200 parts per billion. But compare that to where I set up these initial study conditions, and you can see I'm pretty far below that threshold. So, and even in monensin in surface soils, we only detected it 14% of the time, and the highest concentrations was about 12 part per billion. So at least at this one study site where we had a large input of feedlot runoff that contained antimicrobials, it's not at a level that seems to be affecting microbial processes. I think for future directions, there's a lot of opportunity here for this research to go forward. I've done some work to develop a nitrification evaluation, so I'd like to do a similar evaluation there. There's also better ways to do soil incubations and soil slurries. So I've got some good ideas about how to modify that and also test a better range of levels so that I can narrow down and see if there is this gradualistic effect or threshold effect. Microbial community analysis is easy to do, and I can easily kind of add that on as for something in this study. And then finally, contrasting like a high impact soil here, say like from the feedlot itself here, versus this VTA area where we're having feedlot runoff being applied versus say, prairie that's not going to have any. There'll be some interesting questions that I think we can ask and answer about these soils that have received a history of antimicrobials. Finally, I'd like to acknowledge the funding sources that helped this work, and also Ryan McGee and Madison Jurgens, who are folks in my lab that helped get a lot of this work done. So thank you very much. I know I think I went a little bit over, but one quick. Yes. I think I puzzled on that quite a while. So there's that initial peak, and then there's a secondary peak. I think the initial peak was when we first established the cultures. There probably wasn't a whole lot of oxygen in the system itself, so that could have been related to denitrification. The peak that happens later on after a period of aerobic incubation, I think that's attributed to nitrification. I still have the samples, and I intend to do the nutrient analysis to see if I can see, nitrate building up in those samples. So I will have some idea, I think, what's happening where. But when I've done this before in previous samples, I've seen a similar thing where there's an initial peak where it seems to be like a denitrification going on, and then the culture kind of stabilizes, and then I get nitrification occurring. So. Thank you.